You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
A guy who's very energetic. You know, you got to bring energy to the game of this football. And with this three-down style of football in Canada, you're going to see me running sideline to sideline like a bat out of hell, running around like with my head cut off, like a chicken with his head cut off. So you're going to see me flying around to the ball, making plays.
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 147 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by JR Football and Metal Rocks. I'm your host, Brian Wawrishin, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so as we come out of hiatus during these strange times and talk a little BC Lions and CFL football. Mojo Kemp was scheduled to be here as well, but he got put on the afternoon shift at work and had to cancel tonight, so I'll do my best to steer this ship solo. Thankfully, we have two great guests for you. First, we'll welcome new BC Lions linebacker Jordan Williams to the Den. We'll get his thoughts on the Lions moving up to select him first overall in last week's CFL draft and get to know him a little more. Then, with the fate of the CFL season in doubt, we'll try and get some answers to questions everyone is asking from one of our regular guests, TSN CFL insider Farhan Lalji. It's been a tough few months for sports fans with the COVID-19 pandemic. Many people's lives have been negatively impacted by this situation. Here at BC, we are starting to flatten our curve, but the chances of seeing live CFL football is off the table until at least September, barring a major shift with this virus. For CFL fans, this is devastating news, and for the league, it's very concerning. The league has already asked for $30 million right now from the federal government, with the possibility of requesting another $120 million should the season be canceled completely. It's a hot-button topic, but for me, the CFL has earned this assistance with the tax dollars and revenue they bring to Canada throughout their season, and of course with the Grey Cup, which brings in tens of millions of dollars to local economies of the host province every year. For the BC Lions, it's equally as devastating. They're coming off a disastrous season, and after some solid free agency signings and moving up to select first in last week's CFL draft, the roster is looking promising and there's a new coaching staff in place. This was to be the year the Lions atoned for last year's debacle and returned to being a contender in the West, attempting to win back some of their fan base that has stopped coming to the stadium, but is still gluing their eyes to the television set on game days. This pandemic has also put the sale of the team on hold. Owner David Braley was recently back in hospital, but has since been released. He deserves kudos for opting for pay cuts for the Lions staff versus laying people off, as other teams have done. Remember that the next time you're tempted to call him cheap. But the main thing is we all work together to flatten the curve wherever you are. From us to you, I hope whatever your situation is, you're making the best of it, checking up on those that are close to you, and hopefully soon we can all raise a glass to celebrate life getting back to normal. But let's get into some football now, and the work of BC Lions GM Ann Hervey this offseason has been pretty solid in this podcaster's view. Of course, we felt the same way last season, and we all saw what happened there. But take a look at some of the signings this offseason. They beefed up the offensive line, finding a bookend tackle to complement Joel Figueroa with the addition of Riker Matthews. They added an interior presence on the defensive line, snapping up Micah Johnson and a stud linebacker in Kenny Ladler. They've re-upped with defensive backs TJ Lee and Aaron Grimes, who during this extended offseason will probably be healthy by the time any type of season rolls around this year. They've added to their receiving core with Caleb Hawley and Dominic Rhymes, while extending Lamar Durant and Shaq Johnson. Kicker Sergio Castillo has re-signed with the Lions after his stint in the now-defunct XFL. Ed Hervey wasn't done, and last Thursday he made a move that basically cost him nothing to get the guy he wanted with the number one pick, our first guest tonight, Jordan Williams. There's much to be optimistic with about this roster if we ever get the season underway. Randy Ambrosi did appear in front of a federal committee today, hearing from the arts, entertainment, and sports communities, all of whom are looking for support to get them through this pandemic. He said for the first time today that it's looking more and more like the 2020 season will be canceled. We can be optimistic all we want, but the reality is this is a major hurdle to overcome for the Canadian Football League. This is a league based on ticket sales, not TV deals. And without mass gatherings, they really are dead in the water. But we'll think positive, and just as they have many times before, the CFL will overcome this as well. Well, let's get into it now and welcome one of the newest BC Lions by the way of last week's CFL draft. Many draft insiders had our next guest going number one in the draft, and the BC Lions made sure they were the ones to get him. It's my pleasure now to welcome Jordan Williams to the show. Jordan, thanks for doing this, and welcome to BC Lions Nation. First of all, congratulations on going first overall, and the Lions traded up to get you. Tell us about that day, who was with you when you got the news, and how you celebrated.
Traded up to get me, I was ecstatic. I was like, wow, a team traded up with the Calgary Stampeders. Two spots, they went for 2-1, I mean 3-1, rather. And I was like, they really wanted this guy. So they really invested on what type of player I am. And at the moment, when I was watching the draft, I was actually with my mother in her spot in Louisville, Kentucky. I didn't want to be with a whole bunch of other people because of the times we're in right now. But yeah, I can't even put to words how happy I was, but it was ecstatic.
Yeah, before we get too far into the football stuff here, you're, of course, dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic like everybody else. How are things for you and your family? Last I read, you were in Kentucky.
Currently, we are trying to, you know, my mother, she works at home, and I'm working out every day, trying to make the best out of our opportunity. But I do have weights and things of that nature to try to make this regular. And with this, through these times, you learn that your isolation will lead to your elevation. So the more you isolate in these times, the faster this will be over with. So that's what we're trying to do right now.
Yeah, I agree. Your CFL story really started in 2019 when you nearly landed on the practice roster of the Ottawa Redblacks. And the story that has been making the rounds is that you revealed your mother was Canadian in the back of a cab with one of the Redblacks staff. Of course, being a Canadian draft pick is a little more lucrative than a practice roster spot. Talk about that decision to take a year off of football, and what did you do during that year that you sat out?
Absolutely. Like you said, on the back of the cab, I told him my mother was Canadian. And what I did was I came straight back. I said I need to get back on the field ASAP. And there were some XFL teams that called and things of that nature, but the season was already going. I missed the day where I was supposed to have a XFL tryout, but that was the same day I was going to be flying to Ottawa. So I said, you know what? Let me go make some money. I got a job at Amazon. The person came up to me and they told me about I could use my major and things of that nature to make more money than a regular Amazon worker would make. So I did that to my advantage. I worked there for a couple months, and then up to 6 weeks prior, I quit my Amazon job. They knew, they understood. And when I did that, I had 6 months to train for the regional combine. And that's where we're at right now.
You grew up in a military family, so I assume you probably moved around a lot. When did your football journey begin, and when did you realize you wanted to do it for a living?
Yeah, moving around a lot. Actually, it was I was playing a football game in Florida. And the game is inappropriate, to say the least, but it's basically a game where you throw the ball in the air, and whoever catches it, everybody got to go and tackle them. So you're basically like running like Marshawn Lynch. So, and that was like at, I don't know, 7 years old. So that's the first time I've been – oh, and that's the first time I saw football. I was like, I love this game. I love the, you know, the physicality of it. So that's when I first learned how to play the game of football. Tackle the guy with the football. That's basically what the name is.
Was it tough to move around so much? Like, were you in different high schools, playing on different teams all the time? Or?
I went to a Dover High School in Pennsylvania. I played running back. I moved to Jack Britt High School, and then they moved me from running back to linebacker. I went to, I say, at least five middle schools. That's really where the movement did. Wow. But, yeah, it's crazy. There's the good and the bad, but you got to take the good with the bad and the bad with the good. The good thing is, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say the good thing is you get to learn new cultures, you get to learn new behaviors and things of that nature and adapt to things like that. But the bad thing is you don't really develop the lifelong friendships that other people have. So that might be the bad thing.
Yeah, what did you like better, playing a running back or linebacker?
That was the saddest day, probably the second saddest day of my life, was moved from running back to linebacker.
Yeah. So if you had your choice today, would you rather be a running back?
Yeah. I'll be a running back, yeah.
Just a few years ago, the Lions had two guys in the linebacking spot who are two of the best to ever do it up here. Two ferocious tacklers who can get to sideline to sideline. And of course, I'm referring to Solomon Elamimian and Adam Big Hill. Lions fans are patiently waiting for the next one. What type of player is Jordan Williams, and what would you say is the strongest attribute of your game?
See, a guy who's very energetic. You know, you got to bring energy to the game of this football. And with this three-down style of football in Canada, you're going to see me running sideline to sideline like a bat out of hell, running around like with my head cut off, like a chicken with his head cut off. So you're going to see me flying around to the ball, making plays. And the main thing is hopefully I can make another tackle and rack it up and get to all the accolades. But the main thing is trying to bring home a Grey Cup. So if that – I could have all the personal accolades, but if we don't get a Grey Cup, I failed some part in my responsibility as a linebacker for the BC Lions.
I saw in one of your interviews you like to talk when you're on the field. Does that get you fired up? And as a rookie coming into a pro league, are you going to keep that up?
Trying to line up the defense. And then I talk to the offense, talk smack, because it's fun. We have fun out there. So I talk smack to the quarterback on his cadence. They get aggravated, but it works.
Most guys that get to play professional football had mentors that helped them along the way. Is there someone you can point to say you had a big role in your development as a football player? And did you have a favorite player as a kid?
Multiple people that helped me on my way, but specifically football, I have to say Richard Bailey from Jeopardy High School. He taught me how to go from a boy to a man in his football, because like Ray Lewis said, it's a man's game. But he taught me how to hit. He taught me how to tackle. Like moving the linebacker, that's, like I said, was one of the saddest days of my life. And he made it a lot easier. And he showed me through the ropes, you know, what this game is going to, what you got to sacrifice to be great at this game of football. And he's still lifting weights and things of that nature in the offseason. So when the season does come, you'll be ready to go. And a guy that I look up to as a linebacker will be Patrick Willis. And I just love his tenacity. And he doesn't get tired on the field. And he's a great leader. So I'll say Patrick Williams.
You're obviously a guy that keeps himself in top shape. When you come to the CFL Combine, you run the fastest 40 time of anyone there. We've seen some stories written about some weightlifting records you set in college. What are you doing to keep in shape and get ready for football when that may start again? And has strength coach Chris Boyko been in touch with you at all?
I did talk to Chris, but the things that I'm doing right now to stay in shape is I got somebody lending us weights, and I'm lifting up to everything I was doing before. Like I said, with this corona situation, we try to make everything as regular as possible. So although we're not going to have a whole bunch of people in the room, I'm out there lifting by myself. I got to clean the weight, and after I power clean, I got to jerk it over on my back to do some back squats. So it's a little bit more difficult, but nonetheless, I'm still getting the work in when I'm weightlifting. And yes, I talked to Chris, and he told me some workout plans that he's going to get me to further be the highest version of myself as a football player.
Good stuff. He's one of the best in the biz. I think you'll really enjoy working with Chris. What do you know about Vancouver? I saw you say you're excited to play indoors at BC Place Stadium.
I looked it up. Two of the best top 10 mountain bike places in the world.
Yeah.
At number one and number eight.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of things to do over there. Population is around 600,000. Indoor facility, stadium rather. And I'm just ready to go and experience the. It's a little rainy sometimes. I know that about Vancouver. It's a little rainy, but it doesn't get brutal cold like over there out east in like Montreal or east of Montreal.
Yeah.
So I love it.
We usually have some really nice summers here, so hopefully we'll get to play some football in the summer, and you can experience a Vancouver summer. Football only lasts for so long. You set yourself up for life after football by getting your college degrees in health and communications. If you couldn't play football, what career would you pursue?
That if I couldn't play football, I'll go into coaching. And then after coaching, and let's say I'm getting tired of it, like a lot of these coaches do, I'll probably go into broadcasting. That's one of the, I feel like looking at it on TV, I said, I want to do that and I could do that and call out plays like Tony Romo. So I'll probably go into broadcasting sports.
Well, Jordan, we are excited to have you with the BC Lions, man. Thanks for doing this. Stay safe and we can't wait to see you on the field. Do you have any social media accounts or anything you want to share with Lions fans?
It, created Twitter. Somebody helped me out with the Twitter. It's at Powerful JWE. No spaces, just Powerful JWE. And then my Instagram is the underscore JWE. And hopefully I get that verified, man. Hopefully we out there and get it verified before the season.
Yeah, most CFL players are able to get their accounts verified, but we'll make sure to give you a follow from our account at BC Lions Den. So thanks for doing this and all the best, Jordan. Stay safe. Good stuff there with Jordan Williams. Everyone is saying this guy can play day one. He seems confident he can as well. I can't wait to see him get on the field. All right, let's look at the future of the Canadian Football League now and bring in a friend of the show, TSN CFL insider Farhan Lalji. Farhan, good to talk to you again. How's things going for you and your family during this strange new world that we're living in?
Well, it's it's different, but it's not the end of the world for us. I'm enjoying the extra family time, quite frankly, and I'm not much of a homeschool teacher, but it's been good just from the standpoint of, you know, our springs are generally the most busy time of the year because my son is usually playing like high-level hockey, spring hockey, high-level lacrosse, you know, rep lacrosse. My daughter's involved in a bunch of different sports activities. And, you know, my wife and I don't see each other all spring. We're just running around from field to rink, from field to rink. Usually each kid has two things a day. And, it becomes our busiest 2 months of the year. So just to kind of get a forced break where you just kind of breathe a little bit has been good. So, we all hate the reasons why it's happening, but there are some positives for sure.
How's it been for Luke?
He's at his moments, you know. he's actually pretty good in terms of the schoolwork because in the beginning when it all started, I wanted to create a school day and say, okay, well, you're doing math in this hour and science in this hour, and here you're taking a break, and here you're having lunch. And he's like, Dad, I don't want any of that. I'm going to go 3 hours hard from 9 to 12, and I'm going to get all of it done with no breaks. And I said, okay, and he's actually done it. So so that's been good. He's been challenged without the sports. We still go out and throw, and I've got a quarterback coach that, you know, this one other quarterback that's kind of in our bubble. We go a couple times a week, and we do a bit of work, you know, in a socially distant way. But, and then we'll go out and do some speed and agility stuff, and he'll come with me for runs occasionally. So he's getting some activity, but he's not getting competition, which is hard for him. And my daughter isn't, you know, she's 8, and she's not nearly the focused student he is when needed. So that one's been a bit more pulling teeth for sure.
So I think it's pretty clear that we're not going to be seeing any BC Lions games this summer unless the league can find a way to play in empty stadiums. I know the impact of this on the league, but first I want to talk about the impact on the Lions. Coming off a bad season, this is a critical year for the team to try and rebuild the brand here. How much do you think this is going to hurt the Lions, not only on the field, but off it?
Well, first, let's not write it off yet. I'm of the opinion, like if you would have asked me before Randy Ambrosi today, I would have kind of gauged it at 60-40 the CFL will play this year. Not a slam dunk by any means, but I do think they were making every effort to get on the field. And speaking to some management and coaching types, mostly management types, this week there was a little more optimism than there was maybe a week ago when I talked to a few of the coaches pre-draft. So, you know, I think one of the reasons, you know, if you're Randy Ambrosi and you go up there today and you're making a presentation for money, you need to make the situation sound as dire as possible. So, you know, even a guy that claims to be a pragmatic optimist, I don't think in this situation that's the right thing for them to be doing. I think you want, I'm not telling you he lied or painted a false picture. I just think he emphasized the hard reality versus the possible potential, right? So, I still have not written off the fact that there's a season. If there isn't a season, I think it's going to be hugely difficult. And look, the brand was in a really bad place to begin with coming out of last year, and season tickets and everything were at an all-time low. But no matter what happens, the first year of fans, there's going to be a step back from fans. That's just the way it is, right? I mean, if we have to wait until next year, and they have to go through an off-season of trying to sell season tickets, I think there's a lot of awkwardness to that, you know, whether it be corporate sponsors and a bad economy. You know, I hope they play a little bit, even half a season, just so they can attempt to rebuild the brand if no other place but on television, and just be able to end with a Grey Cup and be able to kind of launch that into the new season on a normal timeline, I think would make a really big difference. I know other people think that you don't want to get into a scenario where you've got to start a season you can't finish because that would be even more debilitating. I'm not 100% convinced it would, only because I think the other leagues are all going to start. And if the CFL all of a sudden can't finish, I'm not sure the other leagues will be able to finish, and then it kind of gets washed up into that narrative, right, as opposed to having to cancel on its own. So I hope they still find a way to play, but if not, it'll be difficult. There's no question, because the brand was at an all-time low, and it'll be hard to re-engage the marketplace for sure.
I think it's well known, you know, that I've wanted the Lions to be sold for a while now. But it's funny how your opinion kind of changes at the time, in the time of a crisis. And that's, you know, that sale is obviously on hold now. But I will say that during the time of uncertainty, I'm glad David Brayley still owns the team. You know, this isn't his first rodeo crisis when it comes to the CFL. And I think he showed his commitment by not laying off any Lions staff during the shutdown, at least not to date. So what do you think about that change of fate as far as the sale of the team?
Yeah, you know, I tweeted the same thing the day I kind of broke the story about, you know, the Lions rollbacks, right? And I felt the same way. I'm with you. I really believe the team needs to get sold going forward at some point, but during crisis time, you need somebody with deep pockets and a deep commitment to the Canadian Football League. And I think David Brayley has both of those things, right? He doesn't need to panic. He doesn't need to fold it. You know, he's lost money in previous years. Heck, when he took the team over, it was in a ridiculous crisis. You know, when Adam Rita and that crew was in here, and, you know, like, there were, look, there was a time when I was in the Lions office and the payroll arrived in a brown paper bag. And I'm not kidding. Right. So I've seen the other end of it, and David Brayley stabilized it, made it professional, paid the bills. He did all of that. Is he allowed the team to go forward? No. Okay. But you're right. In a time of crisis, it's, you know, he's the guy, and the league needs that type of owner, because, you know, it's not a good situation. It's not a good off season. And next season is not going to be good for any sports as well. Right. Like, everybody economically is going to see a residual effect of all of this. And someone's not going to say the economy's back and it's going to be back to 100% the next day. It's going to affect all sorts of industry, and the CFL and the Lions are no different.
Assuming the worst happens and there's no season this year, and the league is struggling to get out of the gate next year, does this league have the ownership, you know, enough money with ownership to kind of float it for a while until things get rolling again, or would they be dead in the water?
I'm not going to go so far and say they're going to fold. You know, this league's been through a lot. You know, I hope it's not the coronavirus that kills it. And, you know, I do think that Bob Young can float it. David Brayley can float it. Three teams that are community-owned are profitable. The Stampeders, you know, like, Hamilton's making money. I don't think that it's all going to fall apart. Maple Leaf Entertainment or MLSC can float the Argos if they have to for a year. Even Montreal, right? Like, the new owner has said last week, even though I don't think the league was happy he said it, because, again, they want to paint the dark picture. You know, he's gone out and said, look, I'm not folding this team. So it certainly keeps it hanging by a thread, but I do think that thread will still be hanging in 2021, if there is no 2020. I don't know that it's going to fold right away. At least, you know, I don't want to believe that. I can't believe that an institution that's been around this long is going to fold because of this.
If we do get to see some football this year, what do you think of the roster that Ed Hervey has assembled this offseason?
Offensively, I like it. Defensively, I'm still very concerned. Offensively, I think, you know, you really upgrade the offensive line by adding a guy like Riker Matthews. I'm disappointed because I was really looking forward to seeing what David Neville could do, and I hope that he still gets a chance to kind of take a step forward. But Matthews is a good addition. Dominic Rimes at receiver is an upgrade, right, over the lack of production they were getting a year ago. I think they're better on the offensive side of the ball. I think they'll be deeper at Canadian receiver and you know, all of that. Defensively, I've still got some concerns, right? I mean, I know they addressed the pass rush based on volume, right? Like, they made wholesale changes, and you hope that Micah Johnson can stay healthy enough to impact the defense enough where it frees up other players. I'm not necessarily completely sold on the defensive ends they added to the mix as significant upgrades. Yeah, they're upgrades over Odell Willis. Not sure they're an upgrade over Sean Lemon. I still think, you know, a lot could change if Jordan Williams can make an instant impact. I'm not sure he can. That's not an indictment on the player. That's just the fact that it's going to be the worst possible offseason for a rookie that's never played Canadian football to come in and make an impact, right? No rookie camp, an abbreviated training camp, and a half season where you better hit the ground running, right? So I think that impacts his ability to be impactful. So, you know, and in the secondary, I still, you know, it'll probably help a little bit because Aaron Grimes, you know, might be able to be healthy at the beginning, so they're not going to have to break somebody in. I'm curious to see what they do at the safety spot, right? Like, do they find a Canadian to play the corner and move Grimes to safety, which has been one of the things that they've thought about doing. So, you know, I still have some concerns. Will they be a little better than they were a year ago? Yep, but I don't think they're going to be. I think there's going to be some work to do on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, coaching staff, they'll be better. Special teams, as a result, they'll be better. So, you know, at the very least, they'll be better prepared, right?
What's the latest between the Players Association and the CFL? There was a breakdown in talks surrounding plans to move forward during this pandemic, and the two sides have recently started talking again. Can you break down what's happening there and what the issues are?
Well, the big issue is paragraph 16 in the standard player contract, which basically says if the league suspends operations, players are to be, you know, the contracts are to be terminated, right? And so the players' perception is that means any slowdown, even a delay of games, you know, if you lose games, you've got a reduction. That affects a player's salary. So either way, they believe that that suspension of operations means that they should be let out of their contracts. And the league's perspective is, as long as the league itself as an entity is operating, that can't happen. And, you know, I don't think that clause was ever written with a pandemic like this in mind. It was just more of a everybody covering your butt type of situation. And, you know, and now here it rears its ugly head. And that said, I don't believe the players want unlimited free agency. They're looking for a window where selected players, a small number of players, and we're talking like three or four, right? We're not talking about double-digit players. They just want players that might have an NFL opportunity to be able to pursue that, rather than having to sit here and wait for a paycheck this year that may not come. If there's a chance to get one down there, they want it. So when the players first brought it up, the league just said, nope, we're out of here. Like, let us know when you change your minds. You know, they didn't want to negotiate or work out an amicable solution around that issue. And I think there is one there. But they just didn't want to entertain any notion of it. And I know they are discussing it. They've been discussing things for the last 2 days, and they'll talk about it again today. And, you know, they by the end of the week, I hope they can at least come to some resolution on that particular topic. And there's a myriad of other issues, right? Because at the end of the day, the entire collective bargaining agreement is affected, right? Revenue sharing model, number of games, like all of it is affected. So they're going to have to get into many aspects of it. And I think it, you know, it's tough to kind of manage the day-to-day operations of the league business and all of the medical concerns that have to be implemented in order to have even an abbreviated season and all the effort it takes to come up with ideas around that and then deal with all these CBA issues in parallel, right? I mean, I think both of those are monumental tasks, whereas in the NBA and the NFL, like in all the other leagues, they're in complete lockstep. Everybody is completely working together, but in this league, they're not. So, you know, the talks were okay first, then this hit, and they shut down. Now they kind of understand that both sides need each other, but, you know, and then today, you know, Peter Julian, who's an MP here in New West, did a bunch of grandstanding because of his union backing and really went after the CFL for not including the players. And look, I'm not anti-player. I'm very much pro-player, but, it was grandstanding because of how backed he is by the unions here, right? Mm. So it was, you know, it may have had a positive effect because, you know, the league may have felt scolded and felt an even greater need to include the players, but you know, I do think that they're having dialogue, and it's been meaningful for the last 3 days, and it'll continue again tomorrow.
I would think this would have to throw a huge roadblock into progression of CFL 2.0 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think CFL 2.0, the brakes on that are going to get hit hard for at least the next calendar year, and they may have to kind of stop and start it again. I think they'll still have the global draft and have the global players come in this year, right? I think they'll go through that exercise. I don't know how much sense it makes, to be quite honest, to just try to get players to travel overseas and get them here. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's necessary, given the circumstances. You look at the NFL not playing games in Europe this year. The CFL could certainly justify holding back, but yeah, just the investment needed to go over there as early as January of next year and begin the process for 2021, I think that's going to be a tough ask, right? So while the league is trying to use this as something that really builds revenue, you know, that's a long-term play, right? I mean, you're going to have to spend a lot in the first 3 years in order to realize some income on the back end. So I think it'd be a really tough pill for Randy Ambrosi to swallow, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had to swallow it.
This question was brought up to me the other day, and while I don't think it's going to happen, it might have some merit. You know, the Lions average between 15 and 20,000 a game. In a 60,000 seat stadium, would it not be possible to, you know, spread people out? I know the logistics would be a nightmare, but could we be looking at something like that when sports returns?
I doubt it, and I just don't believe the government is there, right? I mean, you know, the premier went on this morning and said the same thing, that for the Lions and fans, that's not going to happen. Now, look, one thing we know in this situation is that it's evolving quickly, right? The thought of team sports at the minor level was kind of a non-starter a week ago. When you listen to Dr. Bonnie Henry, she was talking about no competitive team sports for a year. And then all of a sudden, now they're looking at solutions and scenarios for baseball and other sports to possibly play this summer. Now, maybe that just turns into skills and drills and not games. But point is, things move fast. And, you know, could you tell me that our sensitivities and tolerance for all of this, you know, the league or this province opens up the economy 60% next week, it doesn't lead to a spike. And then they decide, okay, well, we can push it a little bit further. Maybe, but it's just so hard to control. Yeah, you could put everybody four seats apart, but then there's more infrastructure cost to staff and open up everything up top, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as a stadium, because the Whitecaps probably won't operate that way. So now you got to roll the tarps up on and off, and someone's going to have to pay for that, and then you're going to have to bring in double the staff to activate the upper deck and the concessions. What do you do with concession lineups? Do you space everybody out? Like, you know, what do you do with washroom lineups? I think, you know, all of those things, as you find out going through this, and look, on a micro level, I'm doing it with BC High School Football, right? Like, we're putting together a series of recommendations on how to make the game somewhat safer. Ultimately, it's a contact sport, but are there other things we can do on the physical distancing side to help it go? And every time you come up with an answer, you got two more questions staring at you, right? So I can only imagine what it's like for them when you've got to factor in that kind of fans. I mean, for me, I'd be more inclined because, like, look, the Lions aren't going to average 15 to 20,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably, if you wanted to have that solution, I would keep the bottom deck open, and you probably are only going to get 5,000 or 7,000 people. Right. So if you can salvage some revenue doing that by really having the diehards, you know, and also, like, think of the Lions demo. Like, there's a lot of older people. Those are probably the last people that should be coming into the stadium.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you and I have both been to Lions practices, and we see the fans that hang out there in their lawn chairs.
Yeah.
Like, they're all 65 and above. Right. Like, I don't want those guys in the stadium.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you were going to do it, it would make more sense to just have the lower bowl and whoever comes in, and you just mark out seats, right? Like, you just say, okay, well, you put in a yellow marker for 5,000 different seats and issue 5,000 tickets, and okay, you can sit there, and, you know, if you happen to be a family and you're in the bubble, maybe you can buy those tickets accordingly. But, you know, maybe there's a solution if our tolerance changes, but I just think we're a ways away from that right now based on current government response.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hi-Ox. What does the outlook look like for high school sports this year?
I don't know. You know, it's 50-50. You know, what makes it harder for high school sports is the number of levels of oversight we have, right? So if you're youth sports, any sport, you're dealing with governments to make a decision, right? So the governments say, okay, the recreation facilities are open, municipalities sign off on the decision, and then, you know, the different provincial sport organizations make pitches to the, you know, the health officer and levels of government, and they either sign off on it or they don't. So on the high school level, we have to go through that process, but then we also have to go through superintendents and school districts and that level of risk management, right? So we could get a passing grade at one level, and the other guys could shut us down. So, you know, we're trying. We're going to try. You know, I'm on a return to play committee, and we're going to come up with a series of recommendations that we hope will ultimately allow there to be football this year. But, you know, I'd say for any contact sport, be it football, hockey, and others, I'd say it's 50-50. And truthfully, here's how I feel about it, is that for over a decade, the sport of hockey has hid behind football on the concussion issue, right? Like, Gary Bettman, it's not a hockey problem, it's a football problem. Look at them. Like, you know, that's his messaging. So they've hid behind football for a long time. They owe us, you know, to say it kind of half facetiously. So I think there'll be a lot more pressure for minor hockey to get started. And then when that happens, and it will, it'll be really difficult at that point to turn around and look at football and say, well, they can go, they're fully covered, and they're a contact sport and you can't, right? Because they're not going to have hockey without, you know, puck battles. So I think it'll be difficult for them to allow hockey and not football. So maybe this once we can hide in the wind tunnel behind hockey, and once they get approval, we could jump out in front and say our turn. So, you know, and hockey certainly has way more infrastructure and lobbying power to make this work. You know, hockey's only problem is they also have to deal with Hockey Canada, because they can get all the provincial bodies to sign off on it, but then Hockey Canada could decide to have a blanket policy across the country, because remember, Hockey Canada is the ones that shut it down, and they control all the insurance. So, you know, BC's in such a great position, but Quebec certainly isn't. And if Hockey Canada says, nope, we're all going to play or we're all not going to play, then hockey gets hurt. But my hope is that they allow provinces to make those decisions independently. BC moves forward with it and football can hustle in behind.
Farhan, I always appreciate your insight. Thank you for your time tonight. And let's hope things get better quicker than we think. Take care and stay safe.
Same with you. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Always great to chat with Farhan Lalji. He's one of the best CFL insiders in the business and a true football fan as well. Well, that's about it for this episode. I hope we brought a little CFL talk to you while we all self-isolate. This podcast is brought to you by JR Football and Metal Rocks. You can find links to both of our sponsors on bclionsden.ca. Make sure to follow our social channels on Facebook at facebook.com/bclionsden.ca, on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. And of course, that's podcast with a PAWDCAST. When our next show will be, I'm not sure, but we'll try and check in and bring you some player interviews, maybe get someone from the Lions front office on, other podcasters from around the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Till then, on behalf of Mojo Kemp and myself, stay home, stay safe, and we'll see you all on the other side of this. Of course, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.